Hi, I'm Yusin.
And I'm Clarice. Welcome back to part two of Inside the Albatross File. We are joined once again by Mr. Janadas Devan, Senior Advisor at MDDI, who is also the government's coordinator for this major project. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Okay, so part one, we talked about the merger, you know, why that didn't work out. And, you know, just 10 months in, this hopeful dream was dashed. Mm. Attempts to ease this growing tension between Singapore and Kuala Lumpur went nowhere.
So this time we're digging a bit deeper, right, into the people behind the politics, right? The power plays, the shifting alliances and the crucial decisions that set Singapore on its path to separation on the 9th of August, 1965.
Okay, we got to start with this very crucial, you know, central character, Dr. Goh Keng Swee. He was then finance minister, right? And he is the very person who started this Albatross Files that we're talking about today. So what's interesting when we were going through the files is that, you know, it went up to March of 1965, but then there was a gap. You know, the next letter that came, the next document that came in was in July of 1965. So, you know, what's happening? What was this, you know, July document? Tell us about that.
There was a huge gap, as you say. The last documents in Albatross, before Dr. Goh's handwritten notes were March 5th and March 9th. March 5th was a report by Mr. Lee, Kuan Yew, of his discussions with the British High Commissioner and other diplomats. And then Dr. Goh's own paper on what a looser federation might look like. I described that paper, very compendious paper, very detailed. And then there was a huge gap, and a lot of things happened during that time, among which Dr. Goh went off for treatment, medical treatment in Germany. He was away for much of June, so that's one reason why there's nothing in June, though later he must have, you know, slipped in a transcript of Mr. Lee's speeches in June, at Malaysian Solidarity Convention on June 6th. And then he comes back to Singapore in early July.
Yes.
And immediately after he comes back, there is a by-election in Singapore, Hong Lim by-election. It was occupied by an opposition member by the name of Ong Eng Guan, who used to be a member of the PAP. And he resigned, broke with the PAP way back in 1961. Two elections he won by convincingly against the PAP. In fact, the PAP candidate in 61 only got 25% of the votes. And then again, 63 general elections, he won the seat again. And then suddenly he resigned in end of June, forcing a by-election in July, on July 10th. And the Singapore leaders then, and they say so in the oral histories, believe that he was induced to resign by the Malaysian authorities, because the Malaysian authorities wanted to know the degree of support that Mr. Lee Kuan Yew and the PAP had in Singapore. So they forced a contest. It was a straight fight between the PAP's Lee Kun Choi and a candidate from the Barisan Socialists. Ong Eng Wan, in the final analysis, did not stand for elections again. And the PAP won by 60% of the votes. A few days later, Razak, Tun Razak, Deputy Prime Minister, asked to see Dr. Goh Keng Swee, and Dr. Goh Keng Swee visits him in Kuala Lumpur, July 15th. In the course of the conversation, Razak, obviously at the end of his tether, asked Dr. Goh, do you have any suggestions? What can be done? What might be done? And Dr. Goh says in his oral history, he was surprised by this question because he wasn't prepared for any proposal. And he just says to them, well, I think the best way is we go our separate ways. So Dr. Goh seems to be the first person to have used the word separate. And Razak says, are you sure Mr. Lee will agree to it? And Dr. Goh says, if we do it fast and we keep it a secret, I think he will. And Razak says, go back and ask him.
Why was Dr. Goh so, I mean, why? How did he go into separation at this point of time? Why?
Well, by that time, the pressure had increased on both sides. You recall in the first episode, I spoke of the strategy Mr. Lee decided to adopt in the wake of the race riots. And this was Dr. Goh's words. He decided on a dangerous strategy at great risk to himself in order to prevent them from using the riots switch on and off to intimidate Singapore and to bring the Singapore leadership to their knees. So he decided on a counter strategy. In other words, I'll put enormous pressure, political pressure, on the Malaysian authorities. We will campaign up and down the peninsula. We will organize up and down the peninsula, including Sabah and Sarawak. We will organize all the multiracial parties and bring pressure to them. And that was the reason why the Tunku, in December 1964, offered a looser federation, or as he put it, hiving off, looser federation, God knows what he meant, but he wanted Singapore out of the Malaysian parliament, and he wanted to go back to the status quo ante where Singapore looked after by the Singapore government and minimal interference from the federal government. You take charge of all your affairs, you are out of my parliament, and we are only in charge of defence and foreign affairs. Well, that failed because the British objected. And British objected, the whole thing collapsed by March 65.
Yes.
But it didn't mean that the Singapore government, and Mr. Lee Kuan Yew in particular, had to dial down their pressure, because if they didn't keep up the pressure, they knew that they would be in serious danger because the agitation on the other side was continuing. Mm. So they formed the Malaysian Solidarity Convention by May 65. They held the first mass rally of the Malaysian Solidarity Convention in June 6.
Yep.
And in between, there were debates in Parliament, fierce debates on their budget. They proposed a budget which the Singapore government didn't like. Singapore, actually businesses also in Singapore didn't like it. They organized, including rallies. NTUC organized a rally against the budget. And they argued in Parliament. As the British High Commissioner noted, every time there was an argument in the Malaysian Parliament, the Singapore ministers won the debate. And so that was the intense pressure that they kept on, both on the ground and in Parliament. And then there was this famous debate, what turns out to be, has now regarded as a famous debate, May 27th, when in response to the then new Malaysian Member of Parliament representing a seat in Alostar in Kedah by the name of Mahathir Mohamad, got up and made a very strong statement accusing Singapore Chinese of only being used to Malays in inferior positions like drivers. And he says, you know, the trouble is that you're not used to Malays who are now in authority. So actually, it was primarily in response to that speech that Mr. Lee got up and made his speech in the King's debate. Sorry, the speech, in the debate to thank the King for his speech. Just like in our Parliament, we have the President's speech opening Parliament, then we have a debate on the President's speech. There in Malaysia, you have the King's speech, and then you have a debate on the King's speech. And so this debate, Mr. Lee's intervention, took place in that debate. He offered an amendment to the motion to thank the King for his speech. And most crucially in that speech, he spoke in Malay. Halfway through, he switched to Malay. And we have a recording of the speech. In this, you'll be able to hear the recording in the exhibition. And he spoke very good Malay with no trace of a accent, you know. And actually, of all people who should praise his accent, Jaafar Albar praised his accent. Othman Wok reports him praising his accent following the speech. And he gave a very, very powerful speech directed at Malay audience. And every person who witnessed the speech says that the Malay audience, especially in the gallery, people from the kampongs, God knows where, were gathered in the Malaysian Parliament's gallery, in the Malaysian backbenches on the government side, were all listening very intently. And it was a very powerful intervention. And both Mr. Lim Kim San, then Malaysia, Singapore Minister, National Development Minister, Mr. E.W. Barker, and various other personages report in their oral history that after that, the Malaysians must have decided Singapore must be out. And the Tunku himself referred to that speech in his memoirs, which appeared in 1977, looking back, he referred to that speech as the last straw that broke the camel's back.
But the PAP leaders, you know, like Lee Kuan Yew, has always been fighting fiercely in debates like that. So what about this one really, you know, makes it, made it the last straw?
Because he was speaking in Malay. He was not... So that meant, as Mr. Rajaratnam says, that meant he can appeal not only to the English etiquette and the Chinese etiquette, he can also appeal to the Malays. Yeah. Right? And speaking about bread and butter issues, right? How do you improve agriculture? How do you improve the lot of poor Malays? Rural Malays, urban Malays, and what are the important issues? And he spoke in a Malay that nobody. How are you going to continue accusing him of being a Chinese leader who only appealed to the Chinese ground when he spoke better Malay than most of the Malaysian leaders?
I mean,
I mean, they themselves said this. And we are not saying this. You know, Tunku said this once, that he spoke better Malay than he did, which may not be true, but that was what he felt.
I mean, so
you're appealing to every segment of the population.
Yeah.
So it was a reminder yet again of the kind of political pressure they could bring.
Yeah.
But this coupled together with the MSC, the Malaysian Solidarity Convention, just for the benefit of people who might not know what that is, you know, why was this?
Malaysian Solidarity Convention was an alliance of all the non-communal parties, not all, only five of them agreed to join, a couple from Sabah and Sarawak, the rest from Malaya and Singapore, of course, PAP, there were five. And Singapore was by far, Singapore's PAP was by far the largest party. In that convention. They had organized rallies starting in Singapore, and they had then continued to organize rallies right up to the eve of separation. The last rally in Kuala Lumpur actually took place on either the end of July or August 1st, 1965, right?
Wow.
And another rally was supposed to take place in Penang. On the day of separation, or the day after the separation, that obviously did not.
It didn't happen.
Yeah. Okay. So they had rallies, you know, Singapore, I think, in Seremban and Kuala Lumpur. Yeah.
But why was it seen as, like, why was this coalition, I guess, of opposition parties seen as so provocative at that time?
Well, they could have organized pan-Malaysian. You could see that, you know, it wasn't just a Singapore party, but they could organize and give leadership and give strength and purpose to a broad coalition that extended the length and breadth of the country. I mean, not only Peninsula Malaysia, but also Sabah and Sarawak.
Yeah.
Right?
They were rallying all the opposition,
they were rallying
right?
all the people. They were, you know, they were rallying,
not
they were bringing together, like-minded people.
Yeah, strength in numbers.
And people who actually did not fight them, the central government, with the fierce intensity that the Singapore leaders up to then... They did not fight as intensely as the Singapore leaders were prepared to fight. So you had a leadership that gave strength and purpose and heart to a broad mass of people.
I mean, at this point of time, it sounds like...
And then Tunku looks at all this. This is not the happy Malaysia that, or Malaya.
Exactly.
That he was, you know, he was nostalgic about. This was a completely different...
What did Tunku do? What was his reaction?
Well, here we don't have the Singapore authorities, the Singapore leaders got wind of the fact that a case was for Mr. Lee's arrest was being prepared, right? And they said so publicly on July 8th or so in 1965. Dr. Toh Chin Chai called a press conference at which Dr. Goh was there. I think Mr. Barker was there. I think Mr. Lim Kim San was there. And they held a press conference to tell the Malaysian authorities, we know you're preparing a case for Lee Kuan Yew's arrest, but if you do, none of us are going to fold. We will all, we are not going to kowtow. We are not going to give up, right? So they gave a press conference. Well, what they didn't know at that time was actually the British knew about this also. Anthony Head, that's a declassified cable. It is reported in this book. He went to see the Tunku on June 1st. The British High Commissioner went to see the Tunku. This was just 3 days after Mr. Lee Kuan Yew's famous speech. And Anthony Head asked him, says, we are hearing these reports. Is it true? And the Tunku actually confirmed it. Yes, I am thinking of arresting Lee Kuan Yew.
Did the British do anything?
Then Anthony Head expressed shock and surprise. And then he tells the Tunku, he reports telling the Tunku, if you did that, we'll have to reconsider our relations, the British government's relations with the with Malaysia. Mm-hmm. And the Tunku says, well, in which case I shall make peace with Indonesia. This is Anthony Head's report, June 1st, right? And then after that, Tunku traveled to London to attend the Prime Minister's Commonwealth Prime Minister's Conference, where he meets the British Prime Minister, Harold Wilson, who reports in his memoirs that he warned the Tunku that he should not arrest Lee Kuan Yew. So there was a real possibility. So it was not fiction, right? They got wind of it in any case, and they went and held a press conference to warn them off on July 8th. So all these dates are very important. July 8th press conference, Hong Lim by-elections July 10th, and then July 15th, Razak says, can you come and see me?
Mm-hmm.
And
everything happens
and
so quickly.
And the Tunku,
right?
I mean, and Dr. Goh says, go our separate ways. So all this is very closely linked, right?
Yes.
You remember May 27, Mr. Lee's famous speech in the Malaysian Parliament. Mm. June 1st, Anthony Head says Tunku. Tunku confirms that yes, he's thinking of it. Then Tunku goes off to Commonwealth Prime Minister's Conference. Dr. Goh also is in Germany. He's not around. Comes back early July. July 8th, there's a Hong Lim by-election going on. July 8th, the PAP ministers hold a press conference, say that you arrest Lee Kuan Yew is not going to be the end of your troubles. July 10th, Hong Lim by-election, PAP 60%. July 15th, the meeting between Razak and Dr. Goh. And then the clock starts ticking.
The British at the point of time were so reluctant to have Tunku arrest or, you know, strip Mr. Lee of his position because they wanted to keep the Federation together. That was important for them, right?
Yes, but they also thought, quite rightly, that that would not have been the end of the troubles because you arrest Lee Kuan Yew, what's going to happen? Sure that there won't be riots? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, are you sure you don't have to arrest the whole lot? And where is it going to end? And then what's the international repercussions?
Yeah. Right? It would have been a mess, right?
Tunku in his anger can say, well, okay, I'll make peace with Sukarno. But they were dependent on the British for support, which is why he changed his mind.
Let's go now to that you know, you say, okay, 8th July, 10th July, and then now 15th July. That was when Dr. Goh met with Razak, right? And then he said, let's go our separate ways. And Razak said, are you sure that Mr. Lee will agree, right? Did Mr. Lee know that Dr. Goh would propose separation?
At that point, he didn't know because Dr. Goh seems to have reported to Mr. Lee that Razak had suggested that we go our separate ways, at least according to the oral history. But Mr. Lee was informed every step of the way, but he didn't know this. And then many, many, many years later, 1994, when Mr. Lee was preparing his memoirs and he asked Dr. Goh permission to look at his oral history. And both the oral histories were recorded sometime in 1981 or thereabouts. And he reads Dr. Goh's oral history and then for the first time, he reads the interviewer asking Tan Kei Chi is the interviewer, who also interviewed Mr. Lee for his oral history, says to Dr. Goh, says, I'm trying to get this bit straight because it would look as if we had suggested separation. We, meaning you yourself. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Goh says, at that meeting, yes, I think that's true enough. And Mr. Lee notes on the margin in his own handwriting, first time read on 22nd August 94.
Wait, hold on. So 94, then he realized that Dr. Goh had went to
was the one who initiated the suggestion.
For separation.
And then he put down the time, 5:40 p.m. in office. It is not in the book, but it'll be in the exhibition.
Wait, hold on. So during this negotiation between Dr. Goh and Tun Razak, what did Mr. Lee think Dr. Goh was going there to talk about?
The letter of authorization that Dr. Goh asked Mr. Lee Kuan Yew to give him And he says this in his memoirs. Mm-hmm. He asked me for a letter of authorization, fearing that I may balk, right, at separation. So I gave him the letter of authorization, authorizing him to talk to the Malaysian leaders, Tun Razak and other people of similar rank, about constitutional rearrangements.
But not separation.
He didn't, there was, the word separation was not there in the, his letter of authorization, which we reproduce also in the Albatross. And he didn't realize until he read separation, the oral history, that Dr. Goh had not pursued looser federation.
He went straight for the separation.
He said he went straight for separation. He went straight for separation. No, he said he did go straight for separation. And then he told Mr. Lee, Mr. Lee reports that he, in his memoirs, that he went straight for separation because it was clear to him this was what the Malaysians wanted. Mm-hmm. So anyway, this is the how it happened. The facts are laid bare in the book.
Why was Dr. Goh? Dr. Goh must have wanted separation as, I mean, did he want separation as well at a point of time?
By that time, yes.
Why?
He says in his oral history that the political costs were too much, too high, and the economic benefits non-existent. So what is this for? So he decided, and mind you, this person was the one who wrote the most compendious paper on what a looser federation might entail, right? So it wasn't as though he wanted separation from March or even earlier, but somewhere in the process, watching things as, you know, unfold, in the including in the period, the month he was away from Singapore, Malaysian Solidarity Convention, debates in Parliament, Hong Lim by-election, intense arguments back and forth, because the Malaysians were also continuing to agitate. Utusan Melayu was continuing to publish and agitate. There were calls for Mr. Lee to be arrested, public calls for him to be arrested. Things were coming to a head. So he decided, when he was asked, what is your suggestion? Tun Razak was the one who asked him, what is your suggestion? And he said, let's go our separate ways.
I mean, even regardless of what era we are in, for Dr. Goh to have made such a big decision by himself at that point of time, I mean, it was, I mean, it's unimaginable. I mean, was it surprising that he had done, made such a big call?
Well, you know, that it takes us into various other subjects, but he was a major figure. You know, he wasn't deputy prime minister. He later became deputy prime minister. And Mr. Lee acknowledges him in his memoirs as his alter ego. I mean, I know this is, you know, this is politics, serious statesmanship and not rock music, but they are like Lennon McCartney, you know. Without Lennon McCartney, there is no Beatles. Without Lee and Goh, there is no Singapore.
Okay, yeah. Now we get it.
That's my era. I don't know whether you know about Lennon McCartney.
Understand as well.
Okay.
We understand. Yes. Going back to the negotiations, I mean, knowing that Dr. Goh went straight for the separation, but you know, bearing in mind, just months ago, they were talking about this constitutional rearrangement. How different were these two negotiations?
Both Mr. Lee and Dr. Goh insisted on secrecy because they both learned a lesson from the previous round. I mean, you can read the Albatross file, how Mr. Lee describes how the British tore apart the earlier negotiations. You know, just piecemeal unraveled the whole thing. And he said they did it extremely skillfully, right? I mean, it's not the Australians who did it. They didn't have the same kind of finesse, he said. It was the British, and it was Anthony Head who did that, right? They just dismantled it piecemeal. And he wasn't going to have a repeat of that. Whether looser federation or separation, he knew it could not have succeeded if the British knew. And Dr. Goh was absolutely on the same page, and he insisted to the Malaysians, secrecy. Actually, periodically in the negotiations, in the talks, they met how many times? The first meeting was July 15th. Mm-hmm. Second meeting was July 20th. Third, July 26th. Fourth, August 3rd. And the final meeting, August 6th, that stretch into midnight August 7th.
Yep.
So, 5 meetings in all.
You did say earlier that the British have...
And different times, either Tun Razak or Tun Ismail or somebody would say, we have to tell the British. And, and Dr. Goh would say, please don't. And then even in the final meeting, August 6th, Mr. E.W. Barker was there. And Mr. E.W. Barker remembers telling Tun Razak, Tun, please don't. You don't understand them. You know how skilled they are. You cannot tell them. Yeah.
But you mentioned earlier that the British have sources everywhere.
They didn't this time round. I mean, because they didn't tell their officials either. Because the separation agreement, maybe because of this, they were scared of it being leaked, was drafted by us. By Mr. Barker. He was the draftsman of separation. He drafted it. And then Mr. Lee, you know, made changes and so on. And Mr. Lee remembers asking his wife, Mrs. Lee, who's a very, you know, highly skilled conveyance lawyer. And she also, oral history is here, included, excerpt from oral history is included in the book. They were the ones who crafted the separation agreement.
Yeah.
And then the separation agreement, not only the agreement, but the amendment to the Malaysian constitution allowing for separation was drafted by not their attorney general, but Singapore's law minister, right? So how many officials were informed? None on their side, right? On their side, it appears only the attorney general was brought in at the last minute, August 6th. Before that, no official on that side knew. Yeah. Unlike the previous occasion where they were consulting their commissioner of police, their permanent secretary of this, that and the other, you know, foreign affairs and whatnot.
15th of July was when the negotiations first started or first brought up. You know, all the way to, we know, 9th of August is when we were officially separated. I mean, if we would think about it, that's barely two to three weeks, right? Yeah. Other than secrecy being different this time, right? It feels like everything happened really quickly.
Yeah. Dr. Goh comes back. From Malaysia, Kuala Lumpur, sees Mr. Lee and reports to Mr. Lee. And in his notes, he said Mr. Lim Kim San was present when he reported. So there were four ministers on the Singapore side who were in the know. Dr. Goh himself, Mr. Lee, Mr. Barker, who drafted the separation agreement, and Mr. Lim Kim San, who appears to have been told.
The rest of them didn't know.
That's all. And on their side, it was Razak, Deputy Prime Minister, Minister of Home Affairs, Ismail. And then later, they brought in Tan Siew Sin and Sambandan, who was the leader of the Malayan Indian Congress, and Tan Siew Sin, the Finance Minister and leader of the Malaysian Chinese Association. So, very tight circle, and the only official on their side seems to have been the Attorney General, who was brought in late, right? Yeah. He was brought in after the thing had been drafted and then to advise them on amendments. That's it.
After the draft thing, I mean, after the negotiations were all down, of course, the signing of the separation has to happen.
Yes.
Tell us about how that went.
The signing, late at night, August 7th, early in the morning, actually, August 7th, they had finally agreed and the typing had been done by Singapore typists again, and not their typists, because their typists, Tun Razak's typists, evidently made a lot of mistakes. So, Mr. Barker called the cabinet secretary at that point, Wong Chui Sen, who was stationed in Singapore House, Temasek House in Kuala Lumpur. And he brought over Teo Ban Hock, who was Mr. Lee's PA, personal assistant. And Teo Ban Hock was the one who typed the documents. And by the time he finished typing, it was past midnight. And so it was signed, dated 7th August, early in the morning. Then they went back to Temasek House. Mr. Barker gives it to Mr. Lee. And he remembers Mr. Lee thanking him for achieving a bloodless coup. And then Mr. Lee calls up Toh Chin Chai and Rajaratnam and say, I need you all to come up. But he arranges for them to come up separately because he didn't want them to share notes and speculate as to why we've been called up, you know, past midnight to Singapore. So those two went up early morning, August 7th, and they were shocked and they refused to sign.
Because they had no idea.
Yeah, all the way no till idea. It was drafted, it was done, negotiations are over, no. And Dr. Toh and Mr. Rajaratnam had no idea.
No idea.
Why were they left in the dark?
Because, well, I suppose Mr. Lee's calculation was, he remembered how the earlier negotiation fared. I mean, they forget about separation. This was separation. The earlier negotiations, looser federation, they objected to that. So, have it fait accompli, and then Mr. Lee goes and sees the Tunku. And Mr. Lee asked the Tunku on August 7th morning, is there no other way? Can we go back to what we had earlier talked about? A looser federation.
Why? Why was...
And it was the Tunku who said no.
But why was Mr. Lee still
talking about
that?
The Tunku said, it is finished.
Yeah.
And the Tunku said, tomorrow when we are not arguing with each other, we'll be better friends. It was the Tunku who said no. Right? So, Tunku was clear. He wanted this out. So, actually, the strategy worked. You put so much pressure, he came to this decision. Perhaps he worked better than you intended, but he was not having any other option. He was not prepared to consider any other option. So, still, Dr. Toh and Mr. Rajaratnam were very reluctant to sign. And then Mr. Lee says, he told them, and all this has been long known, it's been long reported, it's not new. Will you sign if the Tunku tells you? Then they say yes, and he goes back to see Tunku, and Tunku says, I don't want to see them. And Mr. Lee says, can you at least write to them? And Tunku writes a letter, which, again, we have long known this. We republished the letter, and Tunku says, if I was strong enough, perhaps, you know, we could have avoided this, but I'm not strong enough to avoid bloodshed. This is the best way. Please accept this decision.
So he gives the letter
to Mr. Lee, and he says, finish, it's over.
And that's just no way back.
Only after that
they signed.
Toh Chin Chai, because here was the man saying, look, I can't be responsible. I can't prevent the bloodshed.
Yep.
And then Mr. Lee tells Dr. Toh, well, if you don't want to leave, I also won't sign because we cannot have a divided cabinet, but you have to take responsibility for the bloodshed. And they say, well, obviously they're not going to take responsibility for bloodshed. It was Tunku had said as much, right?
Yep.
So they agreed. And then later, Ong Pang Boon, also another reluctant party, having seen signature of Dr. Toh and Mr. Rajaratnam, signs. Mm-hmm. So this was the strongest part of the cabinet that was very reluctant. The others, Dr. Goh himself, obviously, Lim Kim San, Eddie Barker, obviously, and the rest were very much in favour of separation.
But bloodshed, what does that actually mean? What's the worst that can happen?
Because he knew what, he must have known what his extremists were capable of. He must know that the pressure that Mr. Lee was bringing to bear and the PAP was bringing to bear will not cease, right? And that was his complaint, that Mr. Lee refused to settle. I mean, he kept on insisting, right? So he was, and it almost forced him to consider arrest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even knowing all of this, that it could go that far, it could go to such a bad state, Mr. Lee, on the 7th of August, at the end of the negotiation, still asked Tunku, shall we consider, the original plan?
It's Why? Very difficult for people to understand this, but you must remember they've spent... Well, how old was he at that time? 1965, I was 42 years old. Okay, the biggest stretch of his political life, which began when? Early 50s, 15 years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Most of that life was spent fighting for merger, fighting for Singapore reunification, re-merger with Malaysia. Mm. That was their political belief. And it was first clause, as I said, in the PAP's manifesto when it was founded. And he was not the only one who felt that way. A lot of others felt that way. And I think the record, especially the oral history, indicates that he was genuinely torn between what his head told him, which is, well, Dr. Goh is right. Yeah. And the Tunku also was right. Mm-hmm. This is no other way. And what his heart, which I think understood what Rajaratnam and Toh Chin Chai felt.
So he was kind of torn between...
He was genuinely torn,
there was like
I
a
think.
Spectrum I within think, yes, the I cabinet. Think so.
Yeah, yeah.
Such yeah. that even it's, on the 7th of August, yeah. he was kind of...
Mm. It sounded to Mr. Lee like it was an emotional decision. Why?
Because he was torn between... He had rallied all these people. He had gone there and campaigned. He had involved multitudes of people. He had given heart and hope to a whole host of people,
yep.
right? And he was the main person doing it, mm. right? I mean, he was the public speaker. He was the leader. He was the most visible figure.
Yep.
And he had done this. And here he was seemingly, well, in effect, abandoning them, right? So he was torn, I would say, between the responsibility he felt to Singaporeans, whom he had persuaded in the referendum in September 1962 to vote for merger, mm-hmm. and what he owed them, having taken them into Malaysia, now it's turned out to be this, where he can't just give up.
Yeah.
He had to secure their interests. On the other hand, he knew that he was the one responsible for mobilizing millions of people across the entire peninsula, as well as Sabah and Sarawak.
Yeah.
Right? And he was the one who played a tremendous role bringing in Sabah and Sarawak mm-hmm. into Malaysia.
Yeah. And we see that all yeah. manifest on 9th of August. I mean, yes. that was.
Yeah. I think, you know, he broke down, not because, you know, not only because the dream that he had is gone, mm-hmm. but also because of the people he had abandoned. He felt he had abandoned. Mm. And it's very clear in the oral history, and also very clear in the Mrs. Lee's oral history. And she says very, very plainly, not once, but I think three times, the closest my husband came to a nervous breakdown was August 9th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the weight on his soldier at the point of time, yeah. right? It's so yeah. much to bear.
Yeah.
But, you know, we spoke about Mr. Lee. We know that Dr. Goh mm. always wanted the separation. Mm. He negotiated
not always,
for it.
But at least on yeah. July 15th,
onwards,
it's quite
right.
clear.
Yes, yes. yeah. But the other PAP leaders, Dr. Toh, Mr. Rajaratnam, they were clearly opposing right from the start. I mean, on 9th of August, they signed what? On the 7th or 8th of August,
well,
right?
Because, I think both Mr. Rajaratnam as well as Dr. Toh Chin Chai were clearly affected by the Tunku's letter. And then, of course, they knew that the alternative, if they refused to sign, would have either meant a divided PAP, which none of them wanted. And here was the Tunku saying the likely outcome would have been bloodshed.
Yeah.
Right? And the responsible thing they must have decided was to accept separation.
I mean, but it was
reluctant,
right?
And I think at that point, they still hoped for a re-merger. Yeah.
I'm sure.
Least some... Mr. Rajaratnam, even there's a story, February 1966, him saying, you know, the notion of a separate Singapore identity is an absurdity.
Even so?
Yeah, February 1966.
There have been
I think
months
that was
after
the letter. Yeah.
The separation.
Months after separation, he said that. And then he said something like, re-merger is inevitable, right? So a lot of them felt that way. Some of them, not a lot. But anyway, he obviously was one of them.
I mean, for those who opposed, like Dr. Toh and Mr. Rajaratnam, on the 9th of August, what was it like for them?
Dr. Goh says... the August 6th, he began sweating because he felt like a prisoner condemned to death, suddenly released from the prison sentence, you know, or rather the death sentence.
so he was very relieved.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, you know, and so finally the albatross came off his neck. Mr. Mr. Eddie Barker had the same kind of response. Mm-hmm. He actually goes so far as to say in his oral history, I don't understand why they wanted to get into Malaysia in the first place. Oh. So, so that was his response. Right? Whereas Mr. Lee was very emotional.
Yep. Dr. Toh and Mr. Rajaratnam.
Rajaratnam, obviously, you look at his oral history, was very emotional. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, he has a long passage in the oral history saying that now he has to, he realized that he had to prove the rest of his, that he had to spend the rest of his life proving himself wrong. Or he thinks the Singapore government or PAP has to spend the rest of their, you know, their PAP leaders of that time had to spend the rest of their careers proving themselves wrong, which is precisely what happened.
I mean, Mr. Rajaratnam took
and
on...
And Mr. Rajaratnam was the man who later said, well, Singapore shall survive by becoming a global city. It wasn't obvious in 1965.
I mean, he took on the role of the foreign minister, you know, right during the point of separate independence, our independence. You know, at the point of time on 9th of August, it certainly didn't, we didn't see a trace of this divide.
What divide?
The divide in the PAP
party. The internal divide, I guess.
Well, this is when you read that, I mean, there were people of very, very strong views, each individuals. They were not, nobody was anybody else's toady. They were independent people. They had very strong views. They argued. And the documents show that, you know, back and forth on various things between Rajaratnam, Mr. Lee and so on. And the oral history is, you know, even clearer on this score. One huge reason why people like Mr. Rajaratnam, Mr. Ong, Dr. Toh finally decided to sign the agreement, not only because they wanted to avoid bloodshed, it was because out of loyalty to the party and Mr. Lee and the movement, you know, they felt loyal and so they stuck together.
So given all these things that we know now, you know, all the documents that came out from this, you know, we know that Dr. Goh was the one who first said the word separate, we go our separate ways. But Tunku also talked about hiving off.
Yeah.
So I think the big question is, did we seek out separation or were we kicked out?
That is the inevitable question people will ask when they read the Albatross documents. And actually, the story is far more complex than that. Let me pass it out. If the Tunku had not decided on separation, separation would not have occurred. He was the key figure. Up to the last minute, Dr. Goh, Mr. Lee were all uncertain whether Tunku would or would not change his mind. They knew he was a decisive figure. That, you know, he, unlike Mr. Tun Razak, was decisive. He made a decision. He's capable of big decisions. By June 23rd or so, when he met in London Mr. Lim Kim San, who had been part of the Malaysian delegation to the Prime Minister's Conference, Mr. Lim Kim San goes and visits him in his hotel in London. And the Tunku tells Lim Kim San, tell your Prime Minister, the next Prime Minister's Conference, he can come on his own. Mr. Lim says he didn't quite catch the meaning. It was only later on reflection that he realized what the Tunku was saying. Later in 1975, Tunku writes an article, which was later collected in his memoirs, Looking Back, which was also the title of his column in The Star. He describes he had a case of shingles. He suffered from shingles. He ended up in the hospital and he says he was tossing and turning in hospital clinic, London clinic. Says unsure which was more painful, shingles or the thought of Mr. Lee Kuan Yew. And then he finally, you know, decides that Singapore out. And he quotes a letter that he writes to Tun Razak saying, after consideration, the best thing is Singapore, cut off Singapore. Right? That's the phrase he used, cut off Singapore. So just cut off Singapore in the way you would cut off a gangrenous leg. That was July. July 1st, right? If he had not decided that, when Razak heard Dr. Goh's suggestion, he would not have reacted positively.
Tunku was a central character, as in he was a key player in this whole separation. But it was also, you know, this all these different characters and all the goals that they have that, you know, eventually led to something like that.
As I said, if Mr. Lee had not adopted that strategy, why did Tunku come to that decision? Because of the strategy Mr. Lee adopted, right? You try this race riots on me, I'm not going to lie down and accept it. We're going to fight back. So the cost became too great for them. Tunku tried looser federation, British stopped it. The pressure continued. The last straw that broke the camel's back, May 27th, he considered arrest.
Yeah.
Seriously. What stopped him from arrest? Well, the British. Right? So there was a serious possibility that even the Tunku, a very moderate figure, was willing to consider repressive measures, if not for the political cause that he would have borne, primarily because the British might have withdrawn support. And actually, we quote from the declassified documents a cable that Tunku wrote to Harold Wilson, the British Prime Minister, after separation, where Tunku tells Harold Wilson, I had two choices, either arrest Mr. Lee Kuan Yew or let Singapore go. If I'd arrested Lee Kuan Yew, I would have faced international pressure because he accused Mr. Lee Kuan Yew of insinuating himself into the favour of Asian leaders. Actually, what he meant was Afro-Asian leaders as well as the British and also the Australian leadership, right? And I think that played a role because by then, Mr. Lee's international stature had grown. You know, he had gone on these trips. He had established a good relationship with the British leadership, the Labour Party leadership, as well as among the Tories. The Anthony Head, the Malaysians accused the British of favouring Singapore. And actually, from the declassified cables, you could tell that though Anthony Head tried to be neutral, that, you know, he had respect for Mr. Lee, right? In fact, you know, he conveyed to Mr. Lee the threat that you would be arrested. He reports telling Mr. Lee on June 1st, immediately after he sees Tunku, you might be arrested. And Mr. Lee says, I can't help it. I can't change the thing. I can't change course. You know, I have to face the consequences. We cannot go back. And then Anthony Head says, I understand why he took that position. So for all these reasons, however the Tunku might have been tempted to take repressive measures, he decided the better part of valour is to let Singapore go. So there were all these factors. And finally, if it had not been Dr. Goh doing the negotiations, if you read the accounts of his negotiations, he was absolutely masterful. Right? I mean, he ignored certain things that came up. And then July 26th, Razak raises the possibility of how about going back to the previous options, you know, looser federation. And Dr. Goh says, anything you decide is fine with me. You know, our position will continue to improve. Right? But he did not spend time negotiating the possibility of a looser federation.
He had his mind set on the separation.
His mind was set. So he says in oral history, my main duty I can't remember whether it said duty or it says my main function or my main purpose in the negotiation was to remind their leadership of the cost they would bear if we continued on the current course, which he did. Right? So those are the factors. If Tunku had not decided, it wouldn't have happened. Tunku had come to this decision because of the pressure that Mr. Lee brought to bear on them. In the main, Mr. Lee was the one who led the pressure. Yep. He was the main figure. And of the two options Tunku faced, arrest or let Singapore go, because of international pressure and because of pressure from the British, fear of international pressure and the actual pressure that the British brought to bear, Tunku must have decided, okay, separation.
Yep.
But the negotiations could have gone all sorts of ways if Dr. Goh had not helmed the negotiations. Yep. I mean, it's impossible to run this experiment again and to see what will happen, right? Maybe you've been deflected. If of August 7th, Mr. Lee tells the Tunku, can we reconsider? You know, very easy. You know, Mr. Barker and I can just change a few clauses and we are back in.
Yeah.
As the Lusa Federation. Tunku says no. Could have gone either way. But I really don't think it would have been postponed forever. Because the fundamental contradictions that existed between the two societies were not resolvable.
Yeah. So it doesn't sound to me like one party made a decision, right?
No.
And the other followed through.
All these different players
and you must also remember, people like Dr. Toh, Mr. Rajaratnam, Mr. Ong Pang Boon in the cabinet who most strongly were reluctant, most reluctant, were actually the people, together with Mr. Lee, who were responsible for creating the conditions that forced Tunku to make this decision. Because they were the ones who decided to contest there.
Yep.
They were the main force behind the Malaysian Solidarity Convention. They were the ones organizing people, bringing people in.
So all these key players had a part to play.
In the expectation of some other outcome, but somehow or the other, you had this constellation of forces, constellation of people, all working to different ends. And as fate would have it, unwittingly and unknown to each other, they all tended in the same direction, which was separation. Yeah.
That's a very nice way to round it up.
And this,
but
yes.
to just round up, you know, on the book, right, you know, how do you think the release of the Albatross file adds to what Singaporeans already know about separation? Do you think that this material is quite anticipated?
As I said, what is new here is that we are releasing all the documents in Albatross that gives you a contemporary account of how our leaders felt in real time as events were unfolding. In addition to that, we have their recollections 17 years later in their oral history and of the key figures, right? Mr. Lee, Dr. Goh, and all the others, and then also Mrs. Lee giving an account of Mr. Lee's state of mind at that time. So what you have is a very rich human document. You see your leaders as they were individuals, right? And I found that very deeply moving. Mr. Lee's especially, but all of them. The oral histories show that great statesmanship does not rest only on logic and reason. It derives from deep passion and intense emotions. And our case, at least, that was the case, right? And these were extraordinary men. They were all men, with the exception of Mrs. Lee here. When you read the accounts, again, not only Mr. Lee, but all of them, you sense an intense sense of responsibility they felt to Singaporeans and also, Mr. Lee's case, to the people he mobilized in Malaysia. And a deep commitment to certain principles that never wavered, you know. However tempting it was, they were not prepared to compromise on a multiracial society, a multi-religious polity. And they were deeply courageous, all of them.
Yes.
Right? They knew what the consequences would be, and Mr. Lee, as he says in his oral history, knew what assassination or being killed was a real possibility, right? And they were willing to bear those risks, which they knew were considerable, and they knew their lives were at stake because they felt they owed this to the people they led, and they refused to buckle, to waver, right? And at that time, when they were doing this, they weren't certain what the outcome would be. They weren't certain whether they would emerge from this alive, whether they would be arrested, or whether Singapore would become...
Something else
completely.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So all these people, I mean, Rajaratnam, Toh Chin Chai, I mean, all the others who also oppose separation 17 years later in the oral history, they all say the best thing that ever happened. But that wasn't obvious in 1965.
Yeah, that was on hindsight,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was striking.
As I said,
yeah.
All of them, all this group at any rate, you know, didn't think there was an alternative to being part of the hinterland, which was Malaya.
Yeah.
Right? It wasn't obvious that you could survive without this hinterland until much later.
They were humans as well.
They were very
well.
Emotional.
Yeah. You know,
I mean, can you imagine Mrs. Lee saying of her husband, this is the closest he came to nervous breakdown.
Yeah.
That was very striking.
Yeah.
To me.
Yes. Yeah. And 60
so
years.
So he wasn't, you know. Yeah, and he was, because he was genuinely torn.
Yeah.
I mean, I think so. I mean, his oral history reads almost like a novel.
And I think that's also what's very striking to us when we read the book. I mean, for us, it was the emotions, you know, how human they are at that point of time. You know, thank you so much, Mr. Janadas, for sharing your thoughts and your stories with us today. So, you know, 60 years on, this oral histories, the stories, and also the Albatross Files, they are released for the first time to public in a book titled The Albatross Files Inside Separation. So it provides the uniquely, you know, Singapore perspective of what happened in 1965 and in the lead up to it. And it brings so much new depth and detail to our separation story.
So you can also visit the exhibition at the National Library where original documents are on display alongside audio recordings of our leaders recounting those extraordinary months in 1965, all in their own voices. Have fun exploring.